Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Welcome to this week's episode of The Curious Realm. I am Chris Gordon, your host. Man, it is, it's crazy. The weather has been swinging like nuts here in Austin. Like, it's back down to almost freezing again. And it was just 70 degrees, like, yesterday. So, good old Texas spring, folks. Hope everybody's been well. Hope everybody had a safe and awesome Mardi Gras. Welcome to Lent. Get it straight, folks. Just playing. hope everybody's staying off the red meat on Friday, whatever your thing is during Lent. Mine was always finding some way to challenge myself. And my challenge for myself this year was to get out there more with the show. Back in the days of Dudes and Beer, the first couple few years, we did a lot of live stuff. Where we went out to things like Meekum Auto Auction, and did like 5 hour long marathons, with Talking Sound Podcast. I go out with the Tech Podcast Network and cover CES. I go out and cover like the Texas Association of Broadcasters. And it was like, why don't I start going out and covering paranormal conventions, things like that live? So, this community has blessed me, so I have decided to bless back into the community, because that's how that slinky of the universe and power in the universe and manifestation works, folks. So I have gone out and become a sponsor of a few events. So happy to say that Curious Realm will be sponsoring and live streaming from the MUFON Symposium coming up in July in Denver. We will be broadcasting live and sponsoring from the Southeast Texas Bigfoot Conference in Mineola, Texas, as well as the Folk Monster Festival in Folk, Arkansas, the Texas Bigfoot Conference, and the Texas Bigfoot Film Festival. There's a couple more that we're looking at specifically here in Texas, if they happen this year, but so happy to be able to give back to a community that has given so much to us. So to all those events, thank you so much for letting us come out, be a part of you. To introduce our audience to everything that you do out there. And hopefully we'll see you guys out there at the live events, stuff like that. We have some great guests tonight. Guests upcoming, actually. I happened to get Kathleen Martin, who is an investigator for MUFON. She wrote the book Terrestrial Contact, as well as the new book Forbidden Knowledge, A Personal Journey from Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation. Of course, some of y'all may know the fact that she is the niece of the famed Betty and Barney Hill, one of the first abduction cases ever recorded. So we will probably talk about that for just a minute, with that growing up, that kind of stuff and how it brought her to this, but it pretty incredible stuff, pretty incredible book. I've thumbed through the first few chapters and really, really engaging stuff. I cannot wait to talk with her. Cannot wait to talk with her about her realm of MUFON investigation. Thank you so much to our good friend and guest, Sev Talk, who is actively the MC at this year's MUFON convention. She is kind of, I think, who helped build that bridge in the background. So thank you, Sev. Our second guest this evening, after the commercial break, Gretchen Cornwall. I got to say, this is probably one of the most geeked out conversations I've ever had on this show, where it was like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. I think maybe Graham Phillips might beat it out a little bit just because I've followed his work for years. But I am big into the Knights Templar. I love Knights Templar mythology, symbolism, the esoteric knowledge that they gained, all kinds of things. And I was lucky enough to become friends with and have Gretchen Cornwall, the author of Secret Dossier of a Knight's Templar of the Sangreal. She will be the guest on the second part of the show. We will be talking about the Knights Templar, their founding, their supposed full-on execution and wiping off the face of the earth, the fact that some escaped. Did they make it to America? What is the proof of them making it to America? All that kind of good stuff. Before we get to that, we will, of course, be talking to our first guest in the hour, our live guest, Joshua Shapiro from Crystal Skull Explorers. We will be talking about crystal skulls, skull cults in the world, messages from crystal skulls. What kind of things are happening in the world right now that kind of loom whenever you're talking about this kind of stuff? So we'll be talking with Joshua Shapiro about crystal skulls, so much more, even cryptocurrencies. Whenever we get back, right now, let's hit up our news of the week segment, folks. Let's hop on by our Facebook group. Look at that. We are almost up to 1,000 members. Everybody go tell a friend to come join. If everybody goes, tells a friend to join, we will be at double. How about that? So yeah, almost to 1,000 members there. The conversation is always great. Come on by, check it out. Listener Willie posted out of CBS News. Guy Replit, first January 6th defendant to stand trial, found guilty on all charges. Willie also posted out of Business Insider, a Russian warship that attacked Snake Island, where Ukrainian soldiers cursed out invaders, has reportedly been sunk. Biden announces a huge plan on Russian oil imports in his speech today. That out of the sun.com. Out of Mysterious Universe, UFO over Ukraine reportedly attacks Russian tanks while other UFOs recorded over Russia. We've had a big conversation going on about that lately. Out of KVUE right here in Austin, Out of This World Flight experiences blasts from Austin, blasts off from Austin this spring. Yeah, you can actively pay $8,200 and go on a five-hour zero-G ride, folks. 15 parabolas over 5 hours, experiencing weightlessness just like an astronaut. That is our news of the week. Stop on by, check it out while you're online, checking out our Facebook group. Stop on by, check out CuriousRealm.com. You can go by CuriousRealm.com/store. That will get you to our store where you can not only buy all of our swag, but also all of the amazing books by our guests, people like the amazing Joshua Shapiro of Crystal Skull Explorers. Welcome back, Joshua. How are you doing this evening?
Well, anytime I get to be on one of your shows, Chris, I'm in heaven.
Oh, man, I love our conversations, Joshua. They are always lively, and they go so many places. And I really think it's because of these little guys. There is a communication, and, you know, say what you want, folks. I am a logical guy. You know this, but crystals, things like that. Whoops. Sorry, folks. Are the one hippy dippy thing I got in my life. And it's really because I'm an audio engineer. I'm a video engineer. It's all vibration, and the vibration of crystals, the vibration of quartz specifically, is something very unique. The fact that it can store data, hold data, transmit data, it's pretty incredible. And I got Ama, which is my crystal skull here. I got this from you, Joshua, about a year ago now. And The energy that it puts out in this studio is just so absolutely incredible. And the other day, I told you whenever I booked you, I walked in my kitchen and was thinking about Russia. We had just done a Russian episode, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, man, who am I going to have on next week? And Ama flashed in my head, like my crystal skull, like just an image of it flashed in my head. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to see if Joshua Shapiro is available. And then the conversation started between us. And it's just amazing how those things happen.
Yeah, the crystal skulls are sneaky in a way, because they initiate different activities, which are actually good for us. But when it happens, we're like kind of amazed. What's this all about? And why are we feeling that we have to go in this direction or contact this person or do some new study? So, but once you have your own crystal skull, like you do, Chris, like you showed, which you're showing one of our series called the Geronimo Juniors.
Yeah.
So we have these carvers in India that are doing that. And if there's anyone out there that's interested to learn more about that, they can contact me. We have some sitting here with us where we are near Atlanta. And also, we just sold the largest one over 3 pounds to a person in the UK.
Yeah,
so that's what I love. I like to see where the Geronimo Juniors go. They've been going all over the world. And I think that what happens is they link together and they're sending out a really positive energy for our planet. And God knows right now with all the craziness that's happening in the world, we need all the good energy that we can get.
Any little bit helps, yeah. Josh.
Absolutely.
And you know, for me, it's the fact I'm a rocks and minerals collector, so they're kind of my jam to begin with. And the artistry behind the carving of them is absolutely phenomenal. And just the fact that somebody has the skill enough to work in rock quartz, and the fact that these are not like reconstituted quartz where it's melted and poured into a mold or something like that. They're really beautiful.
They have to use diamond tip tools to make these skulls because quartz crystal is a very hard substance.
Well, let's start getting into the crystal skulls themselves. How is it that you came into literally the world and was portaled into this? Because you are the author of The Journey of the Crystal Skull Explorers, Travelogue 1 and 2. There's a couple other books that you have available that we have in our store that you have on your website. All kinds of stuff, even the 6 ebooks, which we'll get into at the end of the show where you can get those folks, everything else. But these skulls have truly changed your life and brought you to a different level of understanding and enlightenment with things. Let's get into that real quick, Joshua.
Well, if the viewers look at our book, to their far right, which has the crystal skull of me and our crystal skull, Portal de Luz, which is the amethyst skull. That was the one that really got me started because back in 1983, I went into my friend's bookstore in San Jose, California, the Ram Metaphysical Bookstore, and Francois pulls out a picture of this crystal skull for me. And my body just literally started vibrating as I was looking at that picture. And so as I keep telling the story over and over, I had an inner and outer earthquake. My inside was shaking like there was an earthquake. And then about 30 minutes later in Kalinga, California, they had a major earthquake and the table, which the picture of the skull was sitting on, was vibrating. So for me, the key was I was getting from the picture any facsimile of any of these skulls contained their essence and energy. Through the picture of me, which is the name of this skull, given by one of its previous owners, which means my friend, was telling me, hey, we're coming back. We're going to help humanity create peace on this planet. And now that you know this, what are you going to do about it? So here we are. See, that was in 1983. So what is it, almost 40 years later, I'm still doing it and still doing presentations, writing books, doing shows like this, trying to help people to get their own crystal skulls as a powerful tool to help them in their spiritual awakening and unfoldment. And, just had a lot of positive experiences with the energy that's around the skulls. And the only conclusion that I can make from this is that there is a living consciousness that works through these skulls, especially if they're made out of quartz crystal. And quartz crystal is this material we have in the physical that allows spirit or dimensional beings to contact us and to amplify energies like they're doing in, all our electronics. You put electrical current through a piece of quartz and it gets amplified, and that's why we have quartz in all of our modern electronics. That's basically how I got started, and I met more skulls, and I met the co-authors of my first book, Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed, and then I just kept kept going. So, you know, the way that I am, if something is positive and benefits other people, then I'm going to continue to do it for as long as possible. But of course, you know, the skulls have taken me into other subjects as well, you know, ancient civilizations, and got a chance when we went to Mexico and I was a speaker at a crystal skull conference there to finally touch and walk on my first pyramid, which is the only pyramid that I've seen and walked upon, which was by Mexico City.
This oh, wow.
Huge, yeah. Huge pyramid. And it's very obvious when you go there that primitive people could not have made it. And then, of course, there's a UFO connection with crystal skulls and, you know, so many stories of people who will contact us and talk about their own experiences, unbelievable experiences they're having around it.
Well, let's get into that UFO connection real quick, because okay. I'm not sure that a lot of people are necessarily familiar with that. So let's they might be familiar with the end of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. That might yeah. be about as close as they get. So let's start there and move into the knowledge transmitted by crystal skulls in relation to what is going on in the world around us right now, even UFOs, UAPs, Russia, all that kind of good stuff.
Right. Okay, so related to UFOs, one of the reasons it comes up in our research is because we have some very sophisticatedly done crystal skulls, okay, that have actually been found. And I think there's a lot more that haven't come out yet, like the blue skull that I wrote the book about, but that's another story. And and then also, you have to think about the legends that are talked about by the indigenous people, because the indigenous people, in my mind, may be the individuals on the planet who understand what the crystal skulls are about the most. And especially like the Mayans talk about the crystal skulls being gifts from, this is my problem. As I get older, I forget some of the stuff.
It's all right. Don't worry about it.
I think it's grandfathers of the Pleiades, but I'm not sure, that the skulls were gifts from the galactics. Okay. I call the extraterrestrials the galactics, to help humanity to, you know, become more spiritual, to have sacred knowledge transmitted through the skulls to people, to bring peace and harmony to the planet. So, and then some people, including myself, have had experiences like, you know, where we do meditation with the skull, or, you know, we're working with it and a UFO contact comes up, whether it's a UFO that shows up, like I'm thinking of the man I met in Las Vegas who was from Mexico, told me that he found the skull when he was going with his class when he was very young. They went on a field trip to a Mayan ruin, and something said, hey, you need to pick up this stone, and underneath the stone was a crystal skull. He told me one time when he was working with the skull, a UFO showed up in the sky, okay? And then the other thing that's quite interesting with the skulls is when you activate them with color, light, sound, or a human person meditating or working with it, holographic images or the inside of the skull will start changing its shape. And so there's actually been people who have recorded some holographic images which show UFOs, like in the Mitchell Hedges skull in our book, Mystery of the Crystal Skulls, yep. Revealed, when they went to Canada to work with the skull and they were allowed to take pictures of it. One of their pictures very clearly showed a UFO appearing inside of the Mitchell Hedges skull. Mm. So some people will actually see UFOs, they'll see extraterrestrial beings, they'll see alien cities, you know, and I think that they're seeing these holographic images because the crystal skulls to me is kind of like a video camera. It's recording on a vibrational frequency everything that's going on around it. And then it works like a computer where if you put the right energy into it, it's going to replay back these images and things that it's recorded.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to me that the galactics would say, hey, let's give a special design crystal in the shape of a human bone skull because this represents how we receive cosmic knowledge. Let's gift this to humanity. And we know that because it's made out of quartz crystal, it will last for a very, very long time. And then it will pass from civilization to civilization, sharing the special energies and the sacred knowledge that's placed within it. So this is why with the indigenous people, a lot of times their shaman or, you know, their religious leader will be doing ceremony, sacred ceremony with these crystal skulls to get this knowledge or to get the special energies that they have.
Well, and, you know, crystals specifically have held sacred place with religions the world over, with cultures the world over. You find crystal daggers, crystal objects,
right.
Of course, the use of crystals in jewelry, sacred objects, all kinds of things. Now, do you think, I guess, because of course, I have created numerous things in my life. I am no sculptor. I am no painter. But I do, you know, make music. I make circuitry. I've worked with wood, things like that. And you can definitely, it's one of those that the way I explain it to people is if I see it in my head, I could probably come pretty close. And it's definitely the fact that whenever a sculptor looks at like a piece of marble or even a piece of crystal, you know, you have to be able to see the grain in the crystal to know where to cut, things like that. So the skill of that gemology, so to speak, is pretty incredible to begin with. But do you think that the carvers themselves have a connection to the crystal and that they are harvesting specific crystals because of their energies, or that the crystal itself absorbs the energy, like you said, kind of like a fingerprint of the object that is being copied because it's in the presence of it, kind of like my Geronimo Mini here, Ama was in the presence of your Geronimo.
Related to the carvers, what they've told me is that the crystal communicates to them what shape it's going to become. It's like they have a vision of it. And so then they start working on it, or the crystal tells them if it wants to be in the shape of a skull, because of course, not all with carvers, you know, they're making everything you can imagine. But it's supposed to be in the shape of a skull, it's like, you know, they have this feeling or vision or sensing of working with the skull. And then there was one carver who I greatly respected and was a great teacher. Moonhawk was his name. And he told me that when he carved the skulls, he did it underwater and he couldn't see what he was doing. So spirit totally guided him. So now that would be, you know, following kind of more a sacred tradition of making the skull and doing it in a sacred way. Now, there was one question you asked me before about this communication.
Yes.
You know, how is this going to help us and help our world and help individuals? And so I want to address that, but let me take a drink of water here. I had some kind of a cold and I still have a slight cough and bug.
That's all right. I'm on a little bit of, thank you so much, Dr. John Hall out there for the help out with the chest stuff. I've had a little bit of a gunk going on inside of me. For my allergies and stuff. But yeah, it's interesting because like, as an artist, I am definitely connected to my medium, you know, and I'm definitely connected also to my muse. Like the whole reason that my studio is set up the way it is I have this concept of the hearth, you know, and in ancient Greece and in many ancient cultures, there was the concept of the hearth, and there was actually like a god or goddess or deity dedicated to it, where you made a place for the muse or the spirits to come to your house, to your place, and to inhabit, like a place for them to come and be happy.
Right.
You know? And I don't think that enough people make that space either in their life, that sacred space, or in their home, that sacred space that is theirs. And I definitely think that, you know, things like my crystals, stuff like that, my skulls, those go a long way to making that sacred space for me. And like you said, these artisans actively see, just the same way that Michelangelo saw the David inside of a piece of marble and was like, I need to free this.
Right.
The artists are spoken to the same way.
Right. So the communication, as I've experienced and also speaking with other people, is it seems like each crystal skull, which is activated, meaning brought to life, okay, and that process usually happens with the person, we call them the guardian or the caretaker, is working with the skull, and they're activating the crystal. So it becomes a communication device in a way to allow galactics, different spiritual beings, dimensional beings, nature beings. I mean, what I've seen is the crystal skulls can facilitate a wide range and variety of intelligent living consciousnesses to come through depending upon what's going on around the skull, whether it's to help the guardian or if the guardian does like I do where, you know, I do public events and we bring all our skulls and people have a chance to experience them. It's almost as if the living consciousnesses, which work through the skull, they know the people that are there and they know what frequencies of energies they want to bring through the crystal skulls. So when the person goes back home, you know, something within them, some new gift, some challenge that they're having in their lives, some health challenge, emotional, mental, whatever it is, they act as a catalyst to try to bring the person more into their true self. Or the other thing is, which I touched on already, is I think that these skulls contain incredible knowledge and information, which for the moment, the best way we've been able to receive it is for a sensitive or a person who is very connected to the skulls. It's kind of like a telepathic or energetic exchange. And then they have to become the translator for it. But I keep having a vision, and I think this is from the time of Atlantis, where they actually had devices, you know, just like, you know, you connect all these devices to our computer and it's sharing different information and video and all this, that there's some kind of device where like a video, 3D video is stored in the skulls and we don't have that device available yet. And once it comes out, you know, then the skulls will be able to play out visually and for everyone to experience directly this knowledge and information that has been put inside of them. When I spoke at Microsoft one time, because I had a friend that lived in the Seattle area.
Oh, wow.
And she went on this spiritual journey to Peru. That's how I met her. I told the people at Microsoft, you know, you're working with the modern computers, but I think the crystal skulls were the ancient computers doing a very similar thing. So this is part of the reason why I think the skulls are so important. It's because we're in a time now where we have great challenges and humanity is ready to start working with and receive this higher wisdom and knowledge. And so this is how I see the crystal skulls playing a key role now and going into the future. It kind of be like where you go into a library and you have these different skulls and you can take one out, you can meditate with it, and you can bring your personal crystals, you put it into the eye, and the skull transfers to your personal crystals. And this actually happens now with the what I would call the very old or ancient skulls. You know, it transfers this energy and knowledge into your personal crystal so you can go home and work with it. So I think a lot of good things are going to come out of this. And then, of course, because they are a communication type of device, if our brothers and sisters, our galactics or in spirit dimension, they want to communicate something and we're not open to receive it because our vibration isn't high enough, they can use the crystal skull as a medium in order to be able to share that energy or information. And then, of course, each skull has its own personality, too. Like, you know, I was talking about Portal de Luz, which is on the cover of the book to the right that you're showing the image right now.
Yeah.
You know, he has a personality, talks to me. You know, sometimes he gives me advice. I remember one time we're in the UK and I heard Portal say to me, Dad, let's go see the crop circles. And so I did. And we had some amazing experiences with that. So I've learned to trust when I hear him making suggestions. He never makes a bad suggestion. Okay. And then, of course, you know, other people tell me.
The
you know,
fun-loving the skull.
After, yeah, really, he is. He's a comedian. A lot of people will tell me, you know, this is with a number of our skulls, not just him. Mm. But sometimes, you know, they'll meet our skulls and then they'll say, you know, the skull's talking to me. I went home and it's communicating with me.
Yeah.
So this has to be a living consciousness. So these are the different levels very quickly to talk about, like, communication. But, you know, a me told me back in 1983, he said, we're returning to help humanity create world peace. And that's what I believe their ultimate goal is that they're going to help us with that. And it's amazing, from 1983 to here we are in 2022, almost 40 years later, there are so many crystal skull guardians all over the world. In every country, I'm sure, in the world, there's someone who has their own crystal skulls that is either using them to help themselves open up more spiritually, or using it for healing work, or, you know, to send special energies all over the planet. So, and we should not discount the new skulls that are being made by the modern carvers. Although they may not have the intensity level of the older ones, they call them their older brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
You know, some of them are really powerful. And Portal de Luz faked out a Mayan elder. He thought it was one of theirs. And I showed him that, no, he's made by a modern carver, but I've been taking him to sacred sites, and I participated in a crystal skull conference where your own priest were doing a Mayan ritual with the skulls. And so he started picking up those special energies from your rituals.
And that's just it. Crystals absolutely absorb the energy that is around them. They are programmed to the energy around them. They should be cleaned fairly regularly. You know, things like that, because they literally just absorb the energy around them.
Exactly.
I can't say there are a few crystals. I have quite a few minerals in my collection, fossils, things like that, that I have just outright purchased, sight unseen, because I trust the seller. But most of my crystals, I do not purchase without touching.
Yeah.
I can't.
Right. We each have our own way to decide which crystal resonates or if one is speaking to us. Well, Spirit is asking me to see if we can sneak in what I wrote down on my piece of paper here.
Oh, do it. Sneak it in.
Okay. It's not to do with crystal skulls.
That's all right.
It has to do with Tartaria and Russia.
Okay.
Now, you know what Tartaria is, right? Or do I need to define that?
Well, let's get into that, because I'm not sure that our listeners are familiar with that. So, because folks, Spirit is one of the spirits from a skull that has given this information to it. Feel free to share with our audience what Spirit has to say about Tartaria, Russia, and what is going on presently, Joshua.
Okay, so Tartaria is one of the free ebooks that I created last year. Now, I cannot prove what I'm going to say, but I would highly recommend, if this resonates with any of your listeners, just go on the internet and look up Tartaria, and you're going to find the most amazing information that you've ever heard before. Tartaria represents an advanced civilization that existed in the area of Russia, or the USSR, which includes the other countries that became independent from it, only about 200 to 220 years ago. They had free energy. They understood the true nature of the earth. They were very advanced spiritually. They were a very peaceful people. They were quite tall. And I would say that who we call the globalists, the cabal, whatever name you want to give to them, the elite, that the people living back there, that 200 years ago, they used an advanced technology to completely wipe out that civilization so they could create the world as we know it now, which has wars and a lot of conflict, and we're seeing all kinds of crazy stuff. So just think of Tartaria as a very advanced civilization. The proof that Tartaria existed are the advanced buildings that still remain all over the world, which was a part of their free energy system. There is another structure called Star Forts. There is also very tall people that existed like in the late 1800s and early 1900s, very tall people like 7 to 10 foot tall that were probably from Tartaria, left over from it. Okay, so now the reason I want to talk about this is because as the world is going crazy right now, especially out in Eastern Europe and Russia, in the Ukraine, there are two other they're countries now, but they were part of the USSR, Kazakhstan, and Turkmenistan. Okay, so they're like south of Russia. If you go to the major cities of these two countries, you will find complete cities of the advanced structures that Tartaria use and that they're probably using the free energy as well. And the major media absolutely will not show you any pictures. I saw pictures of Turkmenistan and one of the cities there on Telegram. And the major media will not show it to you. So my theory is that when Tartaria was obliterated, literally, they did something with water. They flooded huge cities. They wiped out populations. And then the orphans that we hear about in the 1800s were the repopulation of all the major cities that exist basically on the planet, in Europe, in Australia, in China, in the United States, in Canada, in South America. So these two countries still have the complete city. So what I think happened is once Tartaria was wiped out, the cabal went in and they took over these countries and they reused their buildings for their own purpose. Now, what's interesting is Kazakhstan, and I know I'm not pronouncing it right, their people revolted and they took down their government. Okay. Nothing about this in the major media, but on Telegram, it's all over. Telegram is the best place to find out what's going on. And like I said, Turkmenistan, also the same thing, banned city. Now, there actually is a country called Tartar, or we've heard about Tartars. Okay. But Tartars really is connected with Tartaria. All right. It's like a remnant of it. And there's like 5 million people that live in this country called Tartar. They're more Turkish, but Turkish and Arabic seems to be also connected to the Tartarians as well. So I don't know why Spirit wanted me to share this, but these are things that already exist, which is going to be reactivated. All the advanced technology of the Tartarians will come back, and probably the elite already have access to this technology and are not allowing it. But this is part of the vision of the future of a golden age. So this was one piece that Spirit said, Joshua, you got to talk about this on the show. Some people are waiting to hear this.
Well, and I greatly appreciate that, you know, because it's not often that. And I've had you on the show a few times. I think that Spirit has spoken once in our previous appearances, you know. And to know that something so profound, like right now, what is going on with Russia is we did a whole episode about it last week. Next week, we're doing a whole episode with Archbishop James Cloud about Russian end time prophecies. How Russia is involved in the end time with the prophecy of Daniel, as well as China, how the two of them are not on board with the quote great reset, all kinds of things.
But when you talked about this conflict going on, how did you describe it? Because the way it's being described on Telegram is the absolute opposite of what all the major media is talking about.
I'm sure. I mean, my working hypothesis right now is that there is something much more grandiose in the makings. There's no way that with the forces that he has that Putin would just allow this to happen right now, unless there was a bigger play down the road. He has crashed the ruble. Right. The oligarchs who put him in charge with a polonium handshake are about ready to get him out of office with one if he doesn't accomplish something. So to me, it's the fact of why bomb a bunch of nuclear plants that you would supposedly want to keep intact in the place that you're going? You know, we're pretty accurate with artillery nowadays, folks. To say that you accidentally artilleried and then accidentally rocketed not one but two nuclear plants, no. To me, it's the fact of they are using the reparation of those plants and the overtake of those plants in the condition that they are in as a means by which to squirrel away makings for dirty bombs that will go out, things right. like that.
Here's what they're saying on Telegram. And when I say things like talk about Tartary or what I'm going to tell you about Russia, mm-hmm. it's coming from two places for me. Okay. Number one, I don't expect anybody's going to accept or agree. I'm offering alternative explanations. Number two,
it's hypothesis.
Well, I'm not so sure it is.
Well, no, absolutely.
But it has to be looked at as a hypothesis.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. It's coming from trusting what I feel inwardly. And also because I don't know if I talked about this the last time, but I had a coma experience when I lived in Las Vegas in 19. I think it was 1991 or 1990, one of those years. And I was gone for 3 days. And I remember being at a meeting where I saw the future of what was going to happen on our planet. But I was told I was not allowed to remember it. But as things came up, I would know what is true and what is not true. Yeah. So people just look at this. And if you want to talk to me about it afterwards, you can do that. I can point you to the groups on Telegram if you're willing to go there to see it. So we have a war on consciousness that's going on right now. It's about good versus evil. Okay? And I mean, with each passing day, we see the darkness of the governments, of the media, of Hollywood, of the medical profession, of banking and finances and even education. There are so many lies that have been taught to us over our life. It's almost like if you want to know the truth, you watch the major media and you assume the reverse of everything that they're saying.
Yeah.
So what I do is I look at Telegram and then I go to Fox News and I go to CNN. I go to CNN because they're not telling the truth, so I want to see what they're saying. I go to Fox because sometimes they tell the truth, and Telegram, for me, is where the best information is coming out. So these are the things that they're discussing. So I'm not pro-Russia, even though part of my ancestry is from Russia. I have relatives in Russia. I'm not pro-Russia. I'm just looking at it from the truth. Sure. So basically, what I saw, Carrie Cassidy had a post on her Telegram. She's the one who covers all kinds of conspiracies, that the Putin that we know, just like with Biden, they're not the original one. They were replaced. The original Putin was very vicious. He was replaced, I think she said, in 2010. And the one we have now is working on behalf of what we would call the White Hats or the Alliance. As a matter of fact, Russia is disconnected themselves from the SWIFT system, which is the system, major system used in all banks. But yep. According to Telegram, as of yesterday, the QFS, the quantum financial system, is now in place, and they haven't revealed it publicly yet, but it's taking over. And the QFS is a system, according to one person I follow, that was gifted by the Galactics to us, that it cannot be hacked, cannot be taken advantage of. As a matter of fact, it knows when you will log into it from your DNA if you're really who you say you are.
Wow.
It's that sophisticated.
Wow.
So Putin, understanding that all these changes were coming, he disconnected himself from the financial system on the planet. So all these things they're doing against Russia, they're already prepared for it. They're already backing the ruble now with gold. And this is also what's coming up with QFS. All the currencies on the planet will be backed by precious metals so that they will have a value. So why?
Interesting.
So it doesn't make any sense why all of a sudden he's going after the Ukraine. Now, one clue we know about the Ukraine is through the Biden family, the corruption that they've been involved with Burisma, and also it probably goes into the president. So the key thing I would like to suggest for people is Russia is acting on behalf of the White Hats to get rid of, in the Ukraine, a massive amount of systems and activities going on that's been used by the globalists, by the elite, by the cabal. And there was one news reporter on Telegram that said, you know, in the media, they keep showing us the Russians are bombing and killing civilians. It isn't the Russians doing it. It's the military from the Ukraine. And then they're blaming it on the Russians. So I believe, to just try to summarize it really quickly, and of course, you know, there's a lot more going on to this than meets the eye, that Russia is a visible example of this war, of the White Hats and Alliance First, the cabal. They are taking out the dark energy in the cabal in the Ukraine. You know, it's not just that they have a buffer or the Ukraine could join NATO or the EU or whatever. It's that they're helping, because the other part of it is like, I can't remember his name, the underground bases, the dumps that are being bombed where, you know, millions of children are disappearing. That's where they're going, to the underground bases. And we can't talk about the horrific things that have been done. This is coming from the Masons. This is all, you know, satanic stuff.
Came to us from Dulce base whistleblower. Yeah. You know, all that kind of stuff.
Right. So what's happening is this war is a visible example that the really good versus evil is fighting. And the media is promoting it like Putin is Hitler and doing it. So the key is, if you look at which countries are supporting the Ukraine, those are all the countries that the cabal is in charge of. And there was a comment also on Telegram from one of them who said, if we lose the Ukraine, we lose everything. So this must be a key place for them, where their technology and their resources and their finances are, but it's not being used for the good of humanity. So this is what Telegram is talking about. So
as a 47-year-old, Joshua, if it isn't all reminiscent of like Wolverines and Red Dawn and Rambo and every single 80s movie that I grew up with, the fact that like Russia is the enemy of everything, then I don't know what we're living in. You know, I don't know if I want to go to war if that's not the case at this point. Right. You know, so if it's not a reliving of a great 80s movie, if it's not a reboot, I don't know if I want to go out and see it. You know what I mean?
Right. So what I'm saying, bottom line, what I'm saying is Russia is an example of a country that's is disconnecting from the corrupt systems that we've grown up with.
I can definitely see what you're talking about there, because I mean, one of the conversations that I was having the other day was the idea of cryptocurrency, and the idea of not only cryptocurrency but a blockchain, and the fact that that is an inevitable future within the next year and a half, folks. I can just about guarantee. Because the U.S. dollar is worthless. We're literally, to the admission of the Treasury, just literally just printing money. Mm-hmm. Just printing money. It is valued at nothing. It is based on nothing. It is this nebulous calculation for the fact of, if you print money, it will be worth money. Of this weird economics that they're working with now. The only way out of voter fraud, the only way out of the situation that we're in right now with COVID and travel and events, and are you vaccinated? Are you not vaccinated? Right now, quite literally, the example that I give, and pardon the analogy here, Joshua is an older gentleman, but it's like my COVID vaccine card is literally like the condom I used to carry in seventh grade. In my wallet, you know, like, is it any good past the first week? Like, is it any good at all? We see people all the time with fake cards, sell them fake cards, things like that. It's literally just a piece of like number 20 paper.
Yeah.
You know, there's no raised seal. You can't laminate it. It's not an actual card. So the only way is either to tie it to the real ID system or to do something blockchain wise where that's in there. Your real ID is in there. Your voter ID is in there. Imagine the fact of being able to vote via your mobile device through a secure crypto chain, the same way that you buy and sell cryptocurrency on your mobile device.
Right.
And you wouldn't even have to take the day off work. Like, you could do it while you're in the on your bathroom break at work. You could vote for president. You know, like, that will change everything. And like you said, it's interesting because that was one of the conversations that I was having off air with a friend of mine who is on Telegram, things like that, and is a financial guy. He was like, you know, it's interesting that you're talking about the crashing of the ruble, because get ready for Russia to probably come back with a backed crypto.
Yeah, a lot of countries are looking at it. I've been involved with crypto, I think, since 2017.
Yeah.
But again, on Telegram, these are, if I may, these are the recommendations that they're making related to crypto.
Yes. And you know, of course, before you say that, just so you know, folks, we are not financial advisors. I am not a financial advisor. This is what is going on in the community in which Joshua belongs to. These are things that, although I am not involved with these, I have been anxious to hear about them. I myself am involved with crypto. I mine Ethereum, stuff like that. Take things as you will with crypto, folks. It is a volatile market. It moves, it shakes, it comes, it goes. Coins come, coins go. So with that said, what are the messages that you have about crypto and Russia and what's going on right now and in the future, Joshua?
Okay, so related to crypto, the major problem that most people have with it is, does it have really have a value? Okay, like you, in the past, I've taken my Bitcoins and I've cashed them in.
Yes.
And of course, I cashed them in after they went up in value. But what's being said on Telegram is that all the major cryptocurrencies that we've known for several years, most of them, they're going to go away. Because they're being misused, like especially Bitcoin is being misused. And now there's a lot of countries who are telling people that they can't use the mining equipment to create them. I'm sorry, I don't have time to go in and explain all this if you don't know about cryptocurrency. It's totally digital. To me, the cryptocurrency works the same as PayPal. Yeah. Like, you know, when we sell our skulls, we get paid in PayPal. I never see the money.
Yep.
It just goes in the bank and then I send it out. So it's like always digital.
Now,
so that's how crypto is. It's digital.
Let me give my really good, because I didn't get involved with crypto. I am a geek of geeks. You can see all my gear behind me, folks. I build computers from the ground up, but I did not get involved with crypto until my good friend Richard Adams of Breach TV, who's been a guest on the show numerous times, came over for Super Bowl Sunday last year. And he was like, man, you got all these computers for rental and you got like backup cards, like you got backup 8 gig video cards sitting there. Like, let's build you a system. And I was like, man, I don't even know what crypto is. I don't want to get involved with it. And here is the explanation, folks. Here is like the, for those of you who are like, this is a nebulous concept to me. What is not a nebulous concept is the old idea of a warehouse dock. All right. So you have this freight that needs to be moved. Okay. And the freight is an encrypted piece of data. That encrypted piece of data may be parts of a bank over here with transactions. It may be some files from a university over here, what have you. But it's put into this large image right here of this remote. And this image of the remote is broken up into bits and pieces of that data, and it's encrypted in there. And what happens is they take it, they slice it up, and they go, hey, everybody, we need somebody to ship this data. Who's got enough capacity to ship this? And you go, yo, man, I got 8 gigs in this much pipeline. Hey, I got 28 gigs in this much pipeline. And the more power you have to harness, decrypt that data with a graphics card or other processing source, and then give them the information in a secure chain on the back end, the more of that processing share you get. That's how it was explained to me. And I was like, wow, I finally get crypto. I finally get how crypto is made. And it's the fact, and you were asking about why is it valued? The value comes in the fact of every time you do that and make a transaction and mine something, you are actively contributing to the blockchain and making it more complex and making it more secure. So you were actively creating security on the internet and in transactions, and that is what's valuable.
Right.
So it's the selling of that image and encoding of it that they go, we're going to charge $250,000. We're going to charge this many Ethereum to encode your image and put it out there.
Right.
So that's how that works, folks. Anyway,
so
I just wanted folks to understand that.
Right. So this is my tip since we're running out of time.
Here. Yes.
Ripple, XPR, and Stellar, XLM, are two of the cryptocurrencies, and this will only be understood by people who are involved in crypto, that are being recommended that you get as much as possible and hold on, because going forward in the future, the same as will happen with the US dollar and other currencies as well, they will be backed by precious metal. Ripple by gold and Stellar by silver.
Wow.
Okay, so this is why. So that's all I'm doing. When I have extra money, I do online surveys. I make maybe $40, $50 a week. I take that money and I buy these coins. But the other key is you must not hold it on the internet in a crypto exchange. You need to put it in cold storage, which is either a device where you can take it off the internet and hold it in the device. Yep. Or there are programs on your computer that have wallets, which is what holds your cryptocurrency. That's what I've been doing.
Yeah.
So that's key. The other thing I want to mention is about the 6 free ebooks that we have that are available to all of your listeners. All they have to do is contact me. The easiest way to contact me, and I'm sure Chris will put out some contact information.
Oh, absolutely.
CrystalSkullExplorers@gmail.com. Just write to me, CrystalSkullExplorers@gmail.com, and I will either send you the ebooks or links how to get them. We have a 100-page free ebook on crystal skulls. We have another one about that we're living in a computer simulation. I have one on Tartaria.
Oh, wow.
I have part one of part two, which isn't written yet, on flat Earth. Flat Earth is also very important. If you understand it, it means that they have not told us the true nature of the world that we live in. And there are so many proofs of that, but this book will give it to you. I have another book where I talk about my experience where I had my coma experience, and Arges is my name in the future in this lifetime. He is already communicating with me from 2037 to 2040 and said, hey, it's a done deal. And I will tell you that right now, the war is really over. It's like a chess game. Two master players are playing. They're at the point where they already know who's going to win. The light has already won. They just have to try to ease people into all the changes and new information that's going to come out. So I have that book. And then I also did one book because I talked to Gene Decode 3 times from May of last year.
Yep.
I talk about what, you know, like what I was saying with Russia, what's really going on behind the scenes. What's COVID about? The vaccines? Why are we having all these wars? Mm. So it's a high level summary of information that I received, you know, just going on the internet, talking to people, et cetera. All 6 ebooks are free. You just have to contact me and I'll help you to get them.
And where do they go to contact you?
Again, CrystalSkullExplorers@gmail.com, or you can go to CSE.CrystalSkullExplorers.com for our website, and you can get our information. If we can help you, of course, to get a crystal skull too, then just let us know. We can talk about it, shin, photos, etc. So,
yeah, and you know, I will attest to anybody that if you find the crystal that is for you, it can change your space.
Definitely.
Skull or no skull.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be in the shape of a skull.
And man, like I told you, the one that y'all had the other day that was like 5 pounds, I saw it and it spoke to me. It definitely spoke to me. And I'm very glad that it went to a great home, all that kind of stuff. Go follow them. Tell the audience where they can go to follow you on Facebook, because that's where you post all the images of the new carvings that are coming. And that's really the way to tell folks. It will resonate with you. It'll feel like a bell ringing in your ear. It'll feel like somebody pulling a little string on the back of your belly button. when you know it's the right one. So tell them where they can go on Facebook to find you as well before we let you go and go to commercial break and head on to our conversation with Gretchen Cornwall about the Knights Templar.
That's a good question. I'm trying to bring it up here because I don't have. Oh, there it is. So it's facebook.com/joshuashapiro.cse. So facebook.com/joshuashapiro.cse. So we put up the skulls that are available and also all these interviews I do. Once I get a link, I put it up. So when you have the archive of this, I'll put it up also so people can listen to it as well.
Well, it will be coming to you in just a few hours, my friend. So keep your eyes open. Thank you as always, Joshua. Always great talking with you. Like I said the other day, Amma spoke to me, literally. I was in the kitchen pulling out bacon to cook for breakfast, wondering what to do for Tuesday's episode. I was like, I got one guest in pocket, and I've got to get my live guest. We did Russia this last week. Man, like, who do I need to talk to and contact and like, the skull just flashed in my head, and I was like, I'm going to contact Joshua Shapiro.
Right.
And quite obviously, Spirit had some things to say, a few things to say tonight. Thank you so much to Spirit as well, our secondary guest
in this first hour. Another message to
What's
end.
That?
Okay. So here's what I recommend to everyone. Don't pay attention to what's going on the outside, to the media or, you know, the things they're telling you about in the world. Visualize in your mind every day, what would the world look like if we had total peace and harmony? And visualize that every day. Through the power of the mind, we can co-create this. And this is the future that we're moving to. And then one day you wake up in the morning and all of a sudden you will find yourself in that world. It's definitely coming. So I look forward to working with all of you and meeting you and helping to co-create this amazing world that's in our near future. 2037 is only 15 years away.
That's right.
So it's coming here, and we're in the process.
Absolutely. We are right on the cusp of so much intergalactically, galactically, earthwise, and spiritually. It's amazing. So thank you once again, as always, for coming on. When contacted, Joshua, it's always great talking with you. The messages are always amazing. So take care of yourself. Take care of your dear one. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you so much, Chris. Till the next time.
All right. Take care. Man, what an amazing conversation, folks. Always great stuff from Joshua Shapiro. Always interesting things. Like I said, take it with a grain of salt. Take it with a teaspoon of salt. I take it with a tablespoon of sugar. I don't care how you take it, but I am here to tell you, I am surrounded by crystals in my home, in my living room. Even the other day, all of a week ago, whenever the people came here to shoot stuff for video, they were torn between here or the crystals that I have. They are an amazing way to change the energy that you carry with you, to change the energy that you even have in your mind. Kind of that worry stone concept of having that thing in your pocket to ground you. Whenever you touch it, whenever you grab hold of it, can make such a difference. Having that thing, like Amma right here, sits directly in front of me, like right here off camera. She is in every single episode. She's right here with me as I create, design the websites, do everything. So it is all about vibration. That's what crystals are about. That's what our world is about. That is what our universe is about. That's what we're about. So so much more to go check out. Stop on by Crystal Skull Explorers, cs.crystalskullexplorers.com is the website. Joshua Shapiro, thank you as always, my friend. We are going to go ahead and hop out to commercial and to our pre-recorded segment. Gretchen Cornwall, author of The Secret Dossier of a Knight Templar of the Sangreal. We will be talking about Templars, Templar founding, the eradication, supposedly, of the Templars, their actual survival how it is that it would actually be pretty impossible that they didn't survive. Their definite visits to North America, their possible visits and deposits at Oak Island, Gretchen's experience with being on Oak Island, or on Curse of Oak Island, rather, as well as the post show for Curse of Oak Island. So we will be getting with Gretchen Cornwall here in just a minute to discuss that and so much more right after these messages, folks. We'll see you in just a minute. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training, and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. And welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much, as always, to all of our sponsors, especially WebWorks Wireless. They are an up-and-coming company, still actively working on their website, but WebWorksWireless.com, folks, make sure to stop on by, check them out. They are our official website stream sponsor. We are getting ready to start going out. Just got a sponsorship package to MUFON. So we will be going out to events like the upcoming MUFON Symposium in Denver, bringing you live conversation from the expo floor, things like that. We will be going to the Mineola Bigfoot Festival. We've also been talking with Craig Woolheater about going out to the Texas Bigfoot Festival, all kinds of great stuff. So very excited about that. Thank you so much to WebWorks Wireless for your sponsorship and your participation in our community and what we do. Our guest today, I've been very, very excited for, folks, since I contacted her. We will be talking in just a moment with Gretchen Cornwall, the author of The Secret Dossier of a Knight Templar of the Sangreal, about the origins of the Knights Templar, what we know happened to the Knights Templar, and their excursions afterward, because not many people realized that there were quite a few that scurried away in the night. There were quite a few that were secreted away. There are the legends, of course, of their treasure being secreted away to Oak Island. Is it the Ark of the Covenant? All kinds of things. But we do know that the Knights Templar made it here to America, and we'll be getting into that. We'll be getting into the proof of that. I have in my hand one of the many ways that people don't realize that the Knights Templar survived. That's the tarot. There are stories embedded, just like the Knights Templar did in their church windows. You have to imagine a tarot card like a church window. Here is the Three of Pentacles. And if you notice right here, there's a tiny little rose underneath those three pentacles, a symbol of the Knights Templar. The card of judgment with the angel blowing the trumpet. Notice that red flag on a white field hanging off the flag, off the trumpet itself, the flag of the Knights Templar. The card of death, an often misinterpreted card, because people think death, oh my God, it's death. It's actually change is what the death card means. It means that something in your life is going to change for the better, for the worse, up to you, but change is going to happen. And if you notice the banner carried by that skeletal figure, that skeletal knight, once again, there is that rose with the number 13. 13, that doomed number of Friday the 13th, the whole reason that Friday the 13th is a cursed number, and that the number 13 is cursed, is because Friday the 13th was the day that Jacques de Molay was immolated and set on fire by the church and by the King of France. That was officially the end of what we know of the Knights Templar, but those are just a couple ways that the Knights Templar have survived into modern times. That goes beyond the possible Masonic connection, connection to Rosicrucians, connections to the modern day's Knights Templar. But this is one of the many esoteric things, which is what the Knights Templar were all about, was this beautiful, secret, esoteric knowledge that sure is tied to the divine in so many ways. But like we talk about on this show, it extends beyond church. And I think that the monastic order realized this at some point. And that is what led to, of course, the charges of heresy, the charges of satanic worship, all kinds of charges levied against them. Please welcome to the show, everybody, our guest, Gretchen Cornwall, the actual expert about all this. How are you doing today, Gretchen?
Oh, Christopher, after that introduction, I think all I need to do is sit back and let you continue. Well, actually, I learned something new tonight. It had not entered my consciousness that the tarot cards were wrapped up in the story of the Templar Knights. But I do think that the origins of the tarot are far older than what is academically accepted. And that's that's the quagmire that you and I existed and your wonderful followers live in too, which is, what do we do with all that stubborn information that doesn't fit with the academically accepted timeline? So we can't ignore it. We shouldn't ignore it. So the best thing to do is to study it and see where it takes us, which is what we're doing here tonight, today. So thank you for inviting me. It's a privilege, and I'm very happy to be here.
Well, you know, Gretchen, the whole concept of the Knights Templar is something that I have absolutely been not necessarily obsessed about, but fascinated with since I first found out about them when I was in late high school, early college. And I found out about the Knights Templar through somebody that exposed me to the teachings of the Rosicrucians.
Right.
This was probably 1993, 94 for me that happened. I'm about 47. So I was pretty young. I was like 19 years old. I was studying in the seminary for the Catholic Church at the time. That opened up a lot of conversations with open-minded friends that I had. And that is where I was first exposed to the concept of Mary Magdalene as a vessel, the concept of the Rosicrucians, the knowledge that they were believed to have held, and their possible ties to the Knights Templar. That was my first exposure to this. And since then, it has been just a rabbit hole of wanting to gain knowledge and gaining little things like finding out about tarot cards. And like I said, it's not that I read tarot. I use them as a meditation where it's like I literally sit and look at the artwork and interpret that and how it is dealing with my life.
I understand what you're saying, and I think, well, at the risk of insulting somebody, I do love the artwork of the tarot cards, and they are a window into the inner plane of your being. Mm. And going back to the Platonic mystery school, the above the portal, know thyself.
Yep.
In ancient, you see Cassiopeia. Cassiopeia features into my research. She holds the mirror. Now, that's often been described as a vanity action, but it's not. It is, to the mystery school, she is following the motto, know thyself. What are your motivations? What do you think about life? Who are you? Are you honest with yourself? If you're not honest with yourself and can't tell yourself the truth, you're going to have a very difficult time on the esoteric path.
Yeah.
So that is the first step, one of many. And yours is similar to mine. I came across Bajent Lee and Lincoln's Holy Blood, Holy Grail when that came out. And then I discovered Lawrence Gardner, who made the story real for me, human, rather than a dry intellectual discussion, journalistic approach. So, but Lawrence Gardner put beauty into it. And I was driven, you know, I literally felt driven to continue my own search. And I felt propelled. I can't really even explain it.
Yeah.
I know it was 1995, but I woke up thinking, surely there has got to be a Western mystery tradition, because I wasn't able to make things fit. And I was so frustrated. Mm. And then I went to a local bookstore, and there was Lawrence's book, Bloodline of the Holy Grail. And that was it. Everything clicked for me, and I was away. And I have not looked back. I even worked with him for a while. Sadly, he passed of throat cancer, which was very sad. But I actually never met him, because I was in Seattle, Washington, and he was here in England. And since I've lived here for 20 years now, I'm very grateful to be here. There aren't any castles or Templars in Seattle, Washington, so I had to come here.
Not nearly the grandeur, so to speak.
But it is fascinating. I think I've devoted probably more time to one of the masterminds behind the Templar orders, behind the Templars, and that's Bernard de Clairvaux. Mm. And he occupies quite a few chapters in my first book. He's just a genius. The more I read about him, the more I was astounded by him. At the age of 16, he managed to get 30 of his male relatives, all older than he was, married, knights, their own castles. These were successful men, and they all left their families and followed him into a failing Cistercian monastery. And there were only two houses left. And by the time he ended his life, there were hundreds of houses across Europe, and they are still active today. But the difference with the Cistercians, they were in unwanted, swampy lands that they made into farmland, productive fields, and the Templars are Cistercians with swords. So their rule book is virtually the same. But yes, I think it's quite silly to consider the Templars just disappeared in a puff of smoke because the order got disbanded by the Pope. You know, it doesn't make human sense. It's not practical. Yeah. You've got able-bodied men. Not all of them were arrested. And you hear this comments, you know, oh, they were all arrested, and that was that. And no, that's not true. Yeah. You have to ask yourself, who is a Templar? And when you join the order, you wouldn't necessarily be a knight on a horse. You might be the manager of the farm.
Yes.
You could be overseeing the horses. I mean, there are different, everything that it,
same as entering, you know, any monastery.
Exactly.
In the seminary, we had house duty every week. Some people had kitchen duty. I had bathroom duty. I had to clean bathrooms every week. Welcome to humility, folks. That's literally rule one as a monk, is humility. So welcome to it. You don't get to choose what you do. You get assigned as to what you are best suited for. Welcome to the monastery. That's rule one. Like, whether you were a Templar or not, like, they were monks first, soldiers second.
Yes, they were. And not all of them sat on a horse either.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of these guys, they wanted to go bash things with sticks. You know, they were athletes, these knights on horseback. So, and they trained for long hours to handle swords, to ride, to, you know, battle strategy, on and on and on. But it takes 3 to 6 men to keep a knight on horseback.
Yeah.
So, eventually, as the next few hundred years rolls forward, the higher echelons of the mystical side of the order would have organically made friends, if you will, with those in the order that were capable of understanding the inner aims of the order. And it might not have been a knight on a horse. It might actually have been the manager of the farm.
Yes.
And so, you know, when you start multiplying the numbers, oh, there were only 20,000 knights across Europe. Well, okay, if it takes 3 to 6 people to keep that knight on a horse, your numbers have just exploded exponentially. And that doesn't include everyone that it takes, as you said, to run a monastery.
Yeah.
It's a village.
Yeah. It's literally a small army that it takes to run a place like that.
Yes. And, you know, they grew barley, yeah. They grew wheat, horseshoes, you know, they were merchants and they were trading with the merchant guilds. And that's where it gets interesting as well. They were hooked into a network of trading. And also of families. There are families in France that made it their business to support the Templar Knights.
Absolutely.
With sons, money, products. So we're talking about this network that went out into the secular community. And yes. That's where the academic community, and I will not decry their technique. We must be as stringent as we can be because it's easy to make a mistake. But you can't just dismiss this because that is inaccurate as well. When you bring in the discipline of anthropology to this field of the Knights Templar, then it gives you a different perspective and a tool set to understand people at that time. And that's what I've been trying to discuss with you now. We're talking about the individuals in the merchant guild who would have been friends of those in the down the stream on the farm who were trading with them. Maybe even related to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, knights were captured, knights were tortured and they were executed. And, you know, bless Jacques de Molay for his courage and his immediate officers for staying behind. He deserves to be Saint Jacques de Molay. And I hope that is something that is gifted to his legacy and his name. I'm not Catholic, but I don't have to be to appreciate some of the beauty in that religion.
Sure.
I'm not anti-religious. I think there's a golden thread in religion that is a safe house for mysticism. Which
Absolutely.
Is what the Templars were about.
Yeah, yeah, that's just it. It's as we talk about on this show so frequently, Gretchen, the capital T truth. That's universal. It goes beyond the borders of a building and a church and a faith. It's a universal truth that exists in all faiths, whether you're Buddhist or Catholic or, you know, the people praying to trees down the road in a circle, you know?
Yeah.
We all have that basic universal truth. And I want to revisit a moment, because like you said, the idea of these people all being rounded up. The one thing that we cannot mistake is our idea of an army, a drilled army. They were very, very small at that time. Armies were conscripted. They were brought up. They were brought together for a time of battle. They didn't have like a 10,000 person army just kicking around in a kingdom like we do now. They had a small force. They had a police force, things like that, to take care of things that happened. Other than that, you called this forth. However, when you're talking about the Templars, they were a full-on standing army of their own across Europe, a unified, as opposed to any other force, a unified force across Europe. They had spies in every court. to think of the fact that Jacques de Molay didn't know that this was coming is ridiculous. That is literally to discount every bit of military history and brilliance that we know the Templars had. Like that in and of itself, like, hey, historians, you just blew your whole thing about the Templars being this brilliant military might, like, out of the water. You just said, like, they're stupid and they don't even have spies in their own people's court. You know?
Yes, I love it. Like, yes. Well, we know the temple in Paris was empty mm-hmm. the next day, and there was only a skeleton crew there, pardon my French.
or whatever.
Yes, it's, he knew what he was doing. During the night, is it de Challens, Commander de Challens? I might be getting that wrong. He left with 150 men on horseback with 3 carts of gold. Now, he was captured. Some say he wasn't, some say he was. But he only had gold. If he had had sacred objects, Philip would have used those to say, see, I've rescued these holy items from the temple in Paris, and now I've been blessed, you know, by God, I'm the divine king. But it was just gold. And you have to understand horses. I was raised with ponies. I know what they're mm-hmm. about. They're noisy. You get 150 men on cobblestones in a Parisian street.
You're going to hear that coming.
You're going to hear that a mile off. And you know, so that was a decoy. It couldn't have been anything else.
Yeah.
And if the odds to take a Templar are 3-1 on a battlefield, then the forces of Philip's army would have been occupied arresting those men and taking the gold, which is what I think happened. And, you know, the historians get confused about how big France is. When they say that he was making for La Rochelle, there's no way he was going to get to La Rochelle from Paris down hundreds of miles by the morning. It wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I don't care. Unless you got a string of horses, Pony Express style in line.
It's not going to happen. No, there was no way he was going to get down there. I'm sure he would have liked to have gotten away, but as far as what I have read, he did not escape, and there was nothing significant in Paris Temple. Now, I believe it was his nephew whose testimony we have today, and naysayers always discount this, and it drives me crazy. You've got to look at what this 21-year-old knight said when he was being questioned formally. Now, here's a young man who was probably thinking that the Pope, who was their leader, who protected them, and vice versa, was going to come to their aid, which was what Jacques de Molay was all about, trying to clear the Templar name through the Pope and negotiation. And this is all just some terrible mistake. So here's this young man whose uncle had been captured. His testimony is there were 18 ships at La Rochelle that the Templars owned, and I'm paraphrasing very badly, but the key word here is owned, not rent, not they were hoping to hitch a ride.
Owned,
which means that they had capacity to go where they chose at a moment's notice. They would have, each ship had men, they would have had cargo. If the Paris Temple was empty, then the surroundings of La Rochelle would have been empty too.
Yeah.
So I figure they had to have had about 1 month notice. The king sent out the sealed orders to be opened on the night, you know, the night of or the morning of the Friday the 13th. But those orders went out a month prior, and they would have gone into hands of men who either were curious, maybe even had a Templar cousin Who knows? Or just decided that the Templars would pay this man good money, you know, for spilling the beans. But also, King Philip was behaving abominably on the run-up to this event. The year prior, he stole the wealth of the Jewish population in 1306, and he expelled them yep. from his kingdom. He tried to get the order to acknowledge him as the Grand Master. They refused. He owed them a lot of money. We all know these
yeah.
things. You're all aware of these things. So, you know, if you're Jacques de Molay, who had been in the order since he was 21 as an established knight and nobleman, who traveled to England, who you know, he traveled to see his commanderies, and he was brilliant and no dummy. So he knew what was coming. But that testimony of that young man is always thrown away as inconsequential when it means everything. One, his uncle was never going to make it to La Rochelle, and he knew it. So what was being sent down the river of Seine to perhaps hide at the last moment at a merchant house down the river. There were trading posts all the way on down the river Seine to the mouth of La Havre. So, you know, that's one possibility, but they also had other ports, which I don't want to say harbor arms.
Yeah.
And this is Zena Halpern's map. My next book is going to be about this, but I actually found the historical person and castle mentioned on Zena Halpern's map, Chateau de Talmont Castle. I went there, and it's a shell now, but you can still climb the tower. It's huge, huge. Surrounded at one point on three sides by water, it had a harbor arm, and Lord Tours was the owned the castle, and his helmet had stag horns, but he also had a lion. Standing lion. The lower right hand corner of Zena's map says the young lion of Talmont.
Oh.
So, okay, who was the young lion and where is Talmont? So, if you go to the date indicated in Zena Halpern's material of 1347, you're looking at Lord Louis Tours. However, the castle was also owned by Richard the Lionheart. And 6 miles down the road, just to make it more fun, was a Templar holding. So there's a commonality there.
Wow.
And so that's the lower right-hand corner of Zena Halpern's map. And there's more, but I you'll have to wait for the book.
Well, honestly,
throw that at you.
One of my favorite things about your books, and I mean, as my audience knows, over my left shoulder is our library. It continues into the bookshelves behind me from guests and things like that. But one of my favorite things about your book is that, honestly, for the price, it's got color images. It's so rare to begin with in books like this to have supporting images to begin with. Frequently they are footnoted where it's like, reference this book and you'll find the map, or go to this place on Google and you'll find the map. But like, dude, like full on color images of the geometry, things like that. It is just so beautiful, so beautifully and amazingly done.
Well, we're human beings. We're visual. We need the experience. You know, we love movies and we want to be immersed in an experience. So, and I come from an artistic background of theater, of singing, and I designed fantasy medieval dresses for weddings. But what struck me with other books that I've come across earlier on was Bloodline of the Holy Grail had been illustrated with the artwork of Peter Robson, but I wanted to continue that tradition of, and it's like the trocars, you have to have the visual experience to help your imagination grab onto what's being relayed to you.
Yeah.
And that's why the paintings in my book are important. The pre-Raphaelite paintings, the beauty of the nature, the geometry, and also, you know, the importance of navigation equipment, such as Peter Peregrinus, his work on the lodestone. And it is on page 178 of the hard copy. But Peter Peregrinus, forgive me for jumping around.
No, that's all right.
I also bring up the astrolabe and other objects, optical calcite. I'll go into that if you'd like.
Oh, yeah.
But Peter Peregrinus is really important. He was in the service of Charles of Anjou, who was the king of Sicily, and he was the Leonardo da Vinci of that time period. So he was with him around, you know, 1269. That's when Peter Peregrinus, who was an amazing teacher, scholar, and he was the tutor of Roger Bacon, the English scholar, but he discovered the magnetic properties of the lodestone,
yeah,
and wrote a paper on that was in use up through the 1700s. So we're talking from 1269 to the 1700s. That paper that he wrote was still viable. But he says in a letter to his friend, who was a soldier, by the way. So if he's sending a letter to a soldier, this man is educated. So he's not a mere soldier. He's a knight of the nobility who may have been Templar. So we know Roger of Sicily, who came later. Roger of Sicily was a contemporary of Bernard de Clairvaux. And flew the Jolly Roger. That's another thing.
Yep.
But Peter de Mericourt, or Peter Peregrinus, wrote in his letter to a soldier, a friend of his, "You will be able to direct your steps to cities and islands and to any place whatever in the world by using the lodestone and with his instructions." So genius. Genius. I'm constantly awed by the genius of our ancestors.
I think we talk about this frequently, the fact that we discount the ability. A prime example is we still don't know the actual formula for Roman concrete. If we actively, and there's a whole show on Discovery Channel, folks, called After Humans, that shows like what will happen like decade by decade if we disappear. And your house unassisted within 50, 60 years will just be a foundation. It will be gone. Roman concrete to this day, like the Pantheon in Rome, or Parthenon rather, in Rome, is still hardening. Still. Like these structures are still under structural change thousands of years later, flexing with the environment around them. We can't do that. We still don't know how to get the same deep color red in stained glass.
Or blue.
Yeah.
That
the Knights Templar got. We know that they utilize gold in their color red. We know that. But that's about it.
Now you are full of surprises. I am learning from you tonight and appreciating it very much.
Absolutely. Like I said, these things have been like an ongoing fascination with me for like the last 20 years of my life. Well, the thing is, there are people like you who have made this their utter and amazing devotion, Gretchen. And, you know, the fact that you are finally, and people like you who have been researching these things are finally starting to get the eye of researchers, finally starting to get the eye of historians, and actively rewriting history. Because, yeah, for so long, we have just been taught that Friday the 13th, that's it, they're gone. No, man, no. They had outposts all the way to the Holy Land.
Yes, all the way up to through to Scotland on the eastern coastline. That's in my book, Burrow Inverness. There are carvings in Cumbria about that. Yeah. They had the legacy of the Vikings.
Yep.
And there is a clear progression of skill set, ferocious skill set, from the Vikings that became married into nobility, and their skill set passed into the royal house of Paris, the Merovingian house of Paris, and then of England. It seeped out organically, and we're jumping around quite a lot. I hope you don't mind.
No.
If you want to go down a certain track, let me know. But you know, we know that this is, you know, the Templars came about through Bernard de Clairvaux, and I don't mean to dismiss Hugh de Payen. He was brilliant, and he was able to do the business in the Holy Land.
Yeah.
But those nine original knights all came from northern France, and one of them from the Netherlands. That's right across the water from, you know, your Denmark and Norway, and all that DNA is concentrated right in that same place. So, you know, for them not to have been related to see the seafaring culture of the Vikings is unthinkable. And,
and that's a lot of the Rosicrucian teaching, is the fact that these ruling families of Europe are all united by blood. They're all related by blood. And the fact that the Knights Templar entrenched themselves in that by protecting those families and their riches on the way to the Holy Land during pilgrimage, married themselves into the families, all that kind of stuff.
They were the families.
Yeah.
They had to be noble in order to join. They had to be a knight.
Yep.
And so they might have been of a tier level that was out a ways, but they wanted men of note. They didn't want fools.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was very prestigious to join. And we still don't understand fully what happened when they came back from the Holy Land in triumph after digging under Temple Mount for 9 years, 9 nights, 9 years, and becoming famous overnight and rich overnight. Something extraordinary happened. And I do think that they were on a secret mission that Bernard de Clairvaux set in motion with Hugh de Payen, because they were given prime real estate near the palace.
Yeah.
An untried order with no track record.
And cooperation from the local proletariat.
Yeah, and they hadn't even been consolidated as an official order yet.
Yeah.
They simply went.
Yeah, they were a loose association. They had no true blessing from the Pope yet. Nothing like that.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, and they're right next door to the king.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting what occurred there. And they definitely brought something back. And Bernard de Clairvaux and the individuals he worked with, they were scholars. He was one of the brightest minds of his day.
Yeah.
And he, I believe that he thought there was a good chance that sacred objects had not been looted by the Romans. because many objects were, well, the Ark was not, famously not listed by the Romans on their inventory, if I'm recounting that correctly. Yeah. But anyway, it's fascinating what they may have discovered. And even today, no one is allowed to dig, but they estimate there are chambers and tunnels. And I don't know how many football fields can fit onto Temple Mount, but it's just huge.
Yeah, it's a massive complex.
It is. So, you know, but regardless, they brought back mysteries, but I think they had mysteries already, but they wanted to increase their knowledge, their capacity, gain greater prestige. They wanted to go home. And if they believed they were looking for information of a sacred bloodline, then is it possible then that some of them may have been potentially of that line? So many questions and theories sure. abound, but special things were happening there. And we're sitting here talking about the Templars and not the Teutonics, not the Hospitallers. but it is fascinating. Yeah. I'm looking forward to sharing more with you as time goes on, regarding Edward III, who created the Order of the Garter. Do think that that Templarism was alive and well in his household. So I'll have to tell you about that another time. But,
absolutely. And we've got you for a little while longer. Like I told you in the pre-interview, I don't necessarily like to tax first-time guests.
Sure.
we have conversations with guests that can go on for hours sometimes, and they do. And we air all of it, and it's fantastic. But I definitely want us to, because we've got you for about another 20-30 minutes, I definitely want to start getting into the realm of the Templars voyaging to the Americas.
Great.
And how they, because if I'm not mistaken, it's at least part of the lore that came from their actual excursion and scurrying away from France, that they came to the Americas. Of course, their lineage from Vikings, things like that, like you're saying, their connections with Vikings would absolutely give them the knowledge of, like you said, using optical quartz to navigate long distances, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, and the knowledge of the fact that over there is another place. There's copper.
Yes.
Like, we at least know that the Vikings came here and mined copper. Like, in Minnesota, yeah. We know.
Yes.
As far as Minnesota.
Yes. And in Minnesota, of course, you have the Kensington Runestone,
that's
which
right.
I do believe is valid. And that is 200 miles west of a location that I investigated in Wisconsin. I'm no longer working on that project, but if you want to find out more about it, it's called, the book is called The Templar Quest to North America, and it's a photo journal. There are about 150 images in there, but it's such an amazing location. I just can't say enough about it. And I know that it will continue to be studied. But there are Templar cross pâtés that were discovered, triangles, a tomb in Wisconsin. And it's phenomenal. What I realized when I first got involved in the project is, and this is in the book too, the St. Lawrence River Valley was well traveled, explored by the indigenous peoples that lived there. They had their natural trading routes along the St. Lawrence River, the Great Lakes, and it was an established, known highway, if you will, you know. So it's if you've got the Kensington Runestone dated to 1362, if the translation is correct, which I do think it is, then 1362 is within living memory of the Templars.
Oh, absolutely.
Is. And so if I think that there were voyages that started earlier, though, and if you start at Oak Island, Nova Scotia, and head east along the St. Lawrence, you're going to end up following the Native American trade routes all the way going west, and you'll find yourself at the Kensington Runestone. So yeah. It's phenomenal. And it's possible.
Yeah.
On Oak Island, in season 8, they discovered a very large platform of stone. It was stone paved platform. It's I don't know, 4 feet deep. Yeah. It's very skillfully done, more than likely by European hands. And it dates to 1200.
Yeah.
What in the world is a structure like that doing on Oak Island dating to 1200 that's 100 feet long, that has 30 feet wide, and has, we know now, a couple of routes going off of it? So who would have wanted to have been there? Why would they have been there? One side of the island is deep enough to welcome ships. Small vessels. You know, you would have had to have had your major ship out a ways, but you could row right up to the one side of the island. Yeah. I think that it had been visited over centuries repeatedly, and that knowledge got passed down. The name of the river just off the island on the mainland, Gold River. Well, there's your first clue. Mm-hmm. So what I realized was when I was investigating the Northeast for potential European explorers, is that it was rich in timber. It was rich in fur.
Yep.
An early explorer to the East Coast, European, noted that Native Americans would go out and slaughter hundreds of deer. There was no problem with food. They were healthy. They were plentiful. You could live well. There were fish. There were berries.
Yep.
You know, we think of it as an inhospitable place, but to somebody that knows how to live there,
yeah,
it's an Eden.
Yeah.
And they knew how to work the land. And the environment always bounced back to feed them again. It wasn't until much later, when greater numbers of Europeans came in, that they started dying of diseases and were purposefully murdered,
yeah,
and had land stolen, etc. But the earlier Templars would have been there as explorers, as traders, information seeking,
yeah,
and as refugees.
Well, and there is quite the history, even oral history, and beyond even oral history. I'm popping up on screen right now the Mi'kmaq battle flag.
The
Mi'kmaq flag of the Mi'kmaq nation right up there in Nova Scotia and everything else is an exact reverse of the Templar, yeah, battle flag. An exact, yeah, reverse. And when you start thinking about it, and when you start, especially like you said, following that trade route, think about the same trade route that took us west, folks. Think about the same trade route that was followed by Lewis and Clark with their Native American guide. It's literally the exact same route.
And we couldn't have done it. Templars would not have been able to have done it unless they had allies. They would have been,
yeah,
they would have been killed.
And they were absolutely known for that. Even in the Middle East, the Middle East, they had allies. They had local people that they worked with.
Well, they got into trouble for that. They were, you know, the scholarly branches were dealing with Judaic scholars, Islamic scholars.
Yeah.
You know, and that was used against them. They were very intellectual.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was their knowledge of the Jewish faith once again, especially the Jewish high ceremony and the fact of, like you said earlier, the King of France had a couple years before gone through and literally stripped the Jewish people of all their valuables and was very angry at the Knights Templar because they didn't help him do it.
Yes.
And they wouldn't help him do it. They were like, that is wrong. That is not right. It's not their fault you're broke. You owe money to us. And no. Like, we're not going to go out and destroy somebody just because they have a religion. No.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't chase after the Cathars either.
Yeah.
And it's both of which is what
helped bring aboard heresy charges from the church.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very possible. I came across some information. I don't know if it's correct or not. We don't know from an academic point of view, but Bernard de Clairvaux's mother was supposedly related to the Counts of Toulouse.
Mm.
And that's direct, you know, that, and she was quite the powerful woman. She didn't suffer fools, and she was very much a leader, very active in her community, and she was respected by the church leaders. She was very much part and parcel of the landscape. So if she was related to the Counts of Toulouse, that's incredible. And we know that Bernard de Clairvaux went there to preach to the Cathars to get them to come under the fold and come into the fold. And they ran him out and, you know, laughed at him basically. But he never raised a hand against them and said that the Cathars needed a great deal of talking to.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and I don't think that they would have been persecuted had he been alive.
Yeah.
At the time of.
Yeah. I don't think the Cathars would have been gone after by the Inquisition and everything as well. They definitely would have fallen under the exact same protections. They would have, the Templars absolutely would have protected them. And, you know, with that in mind, let's say, especially the open-mindedness of the Templars because of their study, their roundedness when it comes to these thought forms, is what brings a lot of people to consider the fact that they possibly had a hand in the founding of America, with the upper echelons of masonry, things like that. Let's get into that real quick before we let you go.
I don't count myself an expert, but I do know a bit about that, and I think that that's absolutely the case. We know George Washington had an experience, a visitation, where he was almost ready to quit, and this being, light being, came to him and encouraged him not to quit.
Yeah.
I think that when you look at Benjamin Franklin and who he was, how as a Freemason could it not have impacted the founding fathers? And what's interesting about that, and this is difficult to prove, but we the people is an interesting statement. According to legend, Benjamin Franklin consulted with, was in contact with the leaders of the Native Americans in the area, and speaking to their highest level leaders, even taking them back to the seat of the colonial government. And their first comment was, where are your women? there weren't any. But you know, the Native Americans are always talking about themselves as a people, the people. And I love the phrase, and it hit me in a different way. If you think about, was Ben Franklin weighed by their culture at all? We the people. That's so different from thinking about it classically, the way, you know, we never think about it. You know, we never, that's just simply the beginning.
Absolutely.
But it's an interesting idea, but what it does is it's the thin end of the wedge, the Constitution.
Yeah.
at the time, you had to be a white male educated landowner to vote. But it was the thin end of the wedge of democracy that through struggle over time grew to include minorities and women. And unfortunately, it took until 1972 for women to be able to own property without a male co-signer.
Yeah.
Which is really sad. There's, and I hope we never go back.
Oh.
But,
all kinds of horrible laws that are still existing.
Democracy was a threat to absolute rulers.
Oh, yeah.
And the King of France was an absolute monarch, which was different from what was happening in England and Scotland. The English kings, Edward the First, or, you know, Hammer the Scots, boy, does he get a bad rap. However, just looking at it coldly, don't think about poor Scotland right now. He was trying to build law and share power with his barons and lords and create the rule of law. That is not what Philip the Fair in France was doing.
No.
He was a dictator.
He was a despot.
So, you know, English law has a deep and long history. Yeah. And when you talk about the Magna Carta, which was signed, you know, well after Edward the First, King John, wicked King John was forced to sign the Magna Carta, but it's very suspicious and probable that the Templars were involved in that.
Yeah. Well,
they were part of the result, the revolt. They were part of the revolt.
Absolutely. And whenever you look, just to hop back, to Benjamin Franklin, one of the most influential founding fathers, member of the Hellfire Club in France. He was the political envoy to France, involved in all like deep in French culture and in the French court.
I saw
strange, weird ways. And that's just it. Yeah. Like he had Hellfire Club meetings in his basement.
He was a party boy.
So, well, he was definitely quote a party boy, but it was also one of those, I loved the HBO series Samuel Adams, with Paul Giamatti, because it actually goes into that. He was his envoy, and the one that took over Benjamin Franklin's position. And Benjamin Franklin kept telling him, like, he's like, oh my God, like, this is what you come over here and do. You're supposed to be doing the business of America. He's like, this is the business of America. This is how business gets done over here.
He understood that. And I also visited Chateau de la Rochefoucauld, there's a photograph in my second book on the Templar quest to North America. But there is I don't want to call it a plaque, but a vellum place marker in the chateau that's a shameless photograph of me in the courtyard there. I found myself standing in front of this very expensive object, and I realized it was vellum, which at the time it was printed could have been done on paper. So they opted to source vellum, which is a lengthy process of skinning the calf and preparing it to take ink. And, it was a royal archive saying thank you to the chateau for giving up their copy of Benjamin Franklin's book that was in their library to the royal archive, the royal bibliothèque. And it was about how to make money. And it was done for the king at the time.
Oh, wow.
France.
Yeah. The connections of our founding fathers to the Masons, unmistakable. We should really do a whole episode sometime of the connection of the Knights Templar to Masonry, because It's a really interesting topic in and of itself, and one that you really do have to explore and explore deep, because, of course,
it is deep. And Washington, D.C. is a map of Freemasonry.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You brought up tarot cards and yeah. The symbols involved that tell 1,000 words.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal what the culture of Templarism passed down.
The sacred geometry, everything, even the fact of the I'm popping the Three of Pentacles up on screen right now, folks. Even the fact of the Three of Pentacles, you know, the pentacle itself being a five-pointed star, one of the main images that the Knights Templar used in their constructions and everything else. And of course, people have come to notify that and signify that with Satanism, occult, things like that.
But unfortunate and ignorant.
Well, I think unfortunately, most people have come to associate occult with witchcraft and not the actual meaning of occult. You know,
I agree.
Which just means like hidden. Forbidden.
Hidden, and they strove to get closer to God in every way.
That's right. That's
and
right.
That was what it was about.
Yeah.
And when Jesus said, or Yeshua said, you can achieve what I've achieved.
Yep.
That's quite hard to get one's head wrapped around. But, you know, I don't know anybody that can walk on water, but the men of the Templar order and some of the women that were involved over time, and there were Templar women as well, they were doing everything they could to emulate the life of Jesus. And poor Bernard de Clairvaux really struggled with that himself. He lived incredibly humbly. He lived under a stairwell like Harry Potter did.
Yep.
He was probably too skinny when all of the prelates around him were fat and wearing silk and jewelry. He was wearing plain white wool. He did not adorn himself. Rode on a mule with just a few guards and only ate fish. He tried to enforce that diet on the Templars, but fighting men couldn't do it, and he had to acquiesce and allow them to have other protein,
red meat.
You know, they just couldn't maintain their physicality without that.
Well,
so, and that's the practical side of life, all practical and spiritual at
absolutely.
The same time.
Absolutely, and what a lot of people forget is that practicality is that's something that we always say whenever you're reading the Bible, any ancient scripture, things like that. You really do have to know the time period in which it was written, the people it was written for, what the culture was, things like that.
Exactly.
And even to bring this back around to the founding fathers in America and the Knights Templar and the fact that they were a monastic order and an army, the on the back of our dollar bill, the unfinished pyramid in and of itself, the whole concept of the unfinished temple. The fact that you are never a finished temple.
Exactly.
Yourself,
there's always
that
to
is
go.
A monastic concept.
That is
a concept from the Knights Templar. The whole concept of e pluribus unum, of meaning I am one.
Yeah,
that,
exactly.
Once again, somebody's got to clean the bathroom. Somebody has to tend the vineyard. Doesn't matter if you're a good fighter or not. Somebody's got to tend the vineyard so we can eat and have wine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've buffered the apologies.
Oh, no, that's all right.
But it's based on merit.
That's right.
As well. And that is a universal truth that cannot ever be underestimated.
Yeah.
And that's the foundation of democracy.
Yep.
So if you have individuals within the Templar order who rise to the top because of their comprehension of divine law,
Yep.
That is of greater value to the order at that time than, and that person would have been praised and, or, you know, given a higher authority.
That's right.
And you can see that, I believe that you could see that in the Templar Order itself, the first nine knights.
Yeah.
Hugh de Payen actually outranked one of the other knights who had greater status. And, so what order do you get, in a medieval time frame where your underling shoots past you and gets to be in charge?
Yeah.
So that's democracy, or at least it should be. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the problems with the Templars and Templarism today, is that they have been, by in some quarters, branded as evil.
Yeah.
And it's such a shame. There's so much confusion out there about, you know, the crowns of state were quaking in their boots when whispers of democracy started to appear across Europe in the, you know, ever since the Rosicrucians started poking their heads up above the parapet, these whispers eventually coalesced into all-out thoughts of democracy in the early 1700s, late 1600s.
Yeah.
And that's when crowns of Europe started to get really worried. And they were tossing out propaganda that this is evil, this is not the natural order of things. God put me here, not you. You're not going to go past me.
Yeah, we rule by divine right. Who are you to say?
Yeah. Well, guess what?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, you may rule by divine right, but we rule by the mass. There are thousands of us and only one of you.
Exactly.
And it takes number of people to let people know that. And it's dangerous information to let people know that.
You know, we must look after each other. We're all responsible in our communities to be good, to be productive citizens, and to look after our communities, to look after each other. And, you know, that's got to come from all of us. And whoever is at the top must earn it.
Yeah.
With that said, I don't have any problems with a constitutional monarchy, because they bring to the table a continuity if it's not an abuse of power, if they're not abusing power, then it can be a nice thing, you know, for the continuity of history.
Sure.
So, but America was special, is special, and may she retain her capacity for freedom of religion, freedom of speech, devolving into encouraging violence.
Yeah. So many things that the Templars stood for.
There are nuances of mind that I think we need to be teaching in our culture today that have been missed somewhere along the way.
Absolutely. No, and that's just it, Gretchen. We have to be willing to have the conversation. We have to be willing to say these things. We have to be, even like we say all the time on the show, historians have to be willing to be wrong. English teachers have to be willing to be wrong. Scientists have to be willing to be wrong. That's part of the process. I mean, one of the greatest conspiracy theories ever that wasn't lifted until the 1500s, folks, was that the Earth was flat.
Exactly.
It wasn't until Magellan that it was finally proved, the fact that it was round and that you wouldn't fall off the edge, you know? So that's pretty recent when you think about human history, when you think about the whole arc of things. It wasn't that long ago that believing teachings like the Templars believed would get you excommunicated. Even all of a decade ago, they absolved Galileo of his excommunication. And who knows, maybe someday, God willing, they will release the soul of Bernard de Clairvaux and the others, you know, everybody that they killed on that horrible, horrible day. Because, yeah, they, according to their teaching of excommunication, like they damned their soul. And that's horrifying. That's horrifying. Someday they will lift that excommunication from them, knowing what they did. Yeah, absolutely.
And in 700 years, no one thought to pardon them. You know, the Chinon parchment that Barbara Thrale brought out, that's wonderful that she did, but the timing was quite odd. That was released in 2007, a year after the Da Vinci Code film came out. So it was a play to try to bring people, to keep people in the church. And, you know, again, I'm not anti-Catholic. I'm just not. And I respect the current Pope for his capacity to try to make changes that are practical and long overdue.
Yep.
And what people don't understand is that the Catholic Church is, he doesn't just push a button and things happen.
Nope.
There are so many different orders.
Oh,
and that's why there are problems with orders. South America, where there are priests who are abusing their power.
Yeah.
You know,
same in Africa, same in Asia.
And that's the problem.
Yeah.
So that falls to local authority to do so. And that's what most people don't understand.
Yeah. It's sadly like people that you know, think that the president has sway over everything.
No.
He doesn't. He's a figurehead.
On purpose.
Guy's got 10 jobs according to the Constitution. Not one of them is writing a law. Not one.
Yeah.
So
it's quite, you know.
He's a figurehead. The Pope is a figurehead. He makes no actual decisions. That is what the College of Cardinals is for, folks. That is what the College of Bishops is for. Things like that. The Church Fathers. Yeah. Make those decisions that go into the big green book called the Catechism. The Pope is a figurehead. There have been exactly two ex cathedra or from the chair statements in the entire history of the Catholic Church. That's it.
You know, and why did it take them until, what was it, 1969 to say that Mary Magdalene wasn't a prostitute?
Yeah.
And yet it's still being taught around the world in other churches that it is.
Yeah.
And there are 35,000 different Christian sects in the world.
Yeah.
So it's a bit rich when one church goes around telling other people, well, you're a heretic and you're not following the correct version of Christianity.
It's a little much.
You know, a little much. And we're learning today about our ancient past. The Nag Hammadi Library, that the Bible was constructed in 325 at the Ecumenical Council, but because Constantine made it the law of the land. So, you know, our the hand of man is not always honest and often guilty.
Yeah,
it is. However, the great divine never lies.
Yeah. History is up to the interpreters and the victors. Absolutely and always. And Gretchen, I cannot thank you for enough for such an amazing episode. Such a great conversation this evening, talking about these things. Man, so awesome. Thank you so much. Tell everybody, it is as always with the end of our guests, it is time for shameless self-promotion. So while we flash your website up on screen, everybody always knows they can always go to the Curious Realm store to find our guest books. We always embed their books. If you let us, we'll embed your YouTube channel so all of our viewers can find it easily. But let everybody know where they can go to find your books, where they can find your website, where they can come to follow you on Facebook, things like that.
Thank you. I am on Facebook. I pretty well live there. I do have a YouTube channel as well. You can find that from my Facebook page. But my website is GretchenCornwell.com. And I've got thousands of photographs from my time here in the UK. This is a photograph I took at Temple Balsall in Solihull, England, near Kidderminster. Wow. And here's the actual photo. But I realized that I was undervaluing my photographs. And this is a lovely stained glass window. And this has become my logo, as it were. And I've decided to go ahead and take my photographs and create objects out of them. This is a magnet or a decoration of whatever, but I have quite a few. I've got 39 different objects on my website. I had fun creating him. He is a fantastic, grumpy looking Knight Templar, but nobody's cool. But it says, I never underestimate an old Templar. And he just fits the bill. So here he is. He survived 1307. He's training the younger generation of knights in swordplay, in navigation, maybe in sailing, and maybe even mining gold in North America. Who knows? But never underestimate an old Templar. I have that in t-shirt form as well. But I love to travel to castles and Templar locations. And I take hundreds of photographs when I go to a location. And so I'm just starting to develop that more. But my books are there. If you would like a signed copy, personalized, you can order a book on my site or go to Christopher's site to do that. I'm involved in a documentary that will come out on Amazon in December, I believe.
Ooh.
I will be putting more information on my website up about that. I'm working with a director. His name is Luca Santoni, who has done two documentaries so far with 6 million views on Amazon.
Wow.
You can go to YouTube and watch one of them for free. You can find that on my website. So I will be adding more information about that. But he's coming here on June 9th. To interview me for, start the interview process for three 1-hour episodes. I can't wait to work with him.
Wow, that is awesome. Congratulations on that. I am always.
A new book coming out as well, you know, later in the year, and a documentary. So.
The documentary is really, really exciting. I am always, always excited to hear whenever guests have things like that coming out. We have got to have you and the director whenever it comes time for promo for that. Make sure to stop on by patreon.com/GretchenCornwall as well, folks. Support thank her you. Efforts, support things for these documentaries that our guests are making. We always encourage folks, of course, to go out and buy the books. That is the best way that you can support any of our guests' efforts forever and always, is to go buy their books. This is what they do. They spend their lives researching these topics for, well, nerdy folks like us to sit around and read, everybody. So, Gretchen.
Well, we're nerds too.
Thank you. Thank you again. Make sure to stop on by, everybody. Check out The Secret Dossier of a Knight Templar of the Sangreal. Absolutely great book. I'm actively going to go and buy myself one of the autographed copies of the photo book. And dive yourself in a little bit, folks. Start reading into a little bit about that. I'm not saying like go out and become a fortune teller. All right. It's not my thing, but go out and read a little bit about the history of tarot and start reading into the symbology in there, because the stories behind the cards, like I said, the stories of the Knights Templar are embedded in it. Absolutely amazing. Some great history lessons and esoteric things right there that you can find in your local places. Gretchen, thank you again. Please do hold the line while we close things out. Stop on by, everybody. Check everything out at CuriousRealm.com. CuriousRealm.com/store for all the books from our guests, as well as our great merch. You can go to Curious Realm 24/7. That's one of my favorite new things. We now officially good Lord, Dudes and Beer, you can listen to for a month and a half and never hear the same content. As of right now, you can listen to Curious Realm for a day and a half and not hear the same content. So we now have a shuffle player on our website. Stop on by and check that out. CuriousRealm.com/24-7. CuriousRealm.com/live for all of the live broadcasts that we do every week, as well as the upcoming live stuff from events. Thank you so much, everybody. Keep tuning in. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your families. Take care of each other. And remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.